This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with Ayah 260 to 263 of Surah Baqarah, recited by Shahriyar Parhizgar.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. وَإِذْ قَالَ إِبْرَاهِيمُ رَبِّ أَرِنِي كَيْفَ تُحْيِي الْمَوْتَى قَالَ أَوَلَمْ تُؤْمِنْ قَالَ بَلَى وَلَكِنْ لِيَطْمَئِنَّ قَلْبِي قال فخذ أربعة من الطير فصرهن إليك ثم اجعل على كل جبل منهن جزءا ثم ادعهن يأتينك سعيا واعلم أن الله عزيز حكيم مثل الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله كمثل حبة أنبتت سبع سنابل في كل سنبلة 100 حبة والله يضاعف لمن يشاء والله واسع عليم الذين ينفقون أموالهم في سبيل الله ثم لا يتبعون ما أنفقوا منا ولا أذى لهم أجرهم عند ربهم ولا خوف عليهم ولا هم يحزنون قول معروف ومغفرة خير من صدقة يتبعها أذى والله غني حليم.
In the name of Allah, and when Abraham said, My Lord, show me how you revive the dead. He said, Do you not believe? He said, Yes, indeed, but in order that my heart may be at rest. He said, Take 4 of the birds, then cut them into pieces, and place a part of them on every mountain. Then call them, they will come to you, hastening, and know that Allah is Almighty and All-Wise. Those who spend their wealth in the way of Allah and then do not follow what they have spent with reproaches and affronts, they shall have their reward near their Lord, and they will have no fear, nor will they grieve. An honorable word with pardon is better than a charity followed by a front, and Allah is all-sufficient, most forbearing.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard by the internet, FM, and satellites. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is iranradio.ir. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bring us out from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Welcome, everyone, to this episode of Spotlight. For decades, Europe was told it had a reliable partner across the Atlantic, a defender of a rules-based order. But now that promise lies broken and exposed as a lie. The so-called peace plan unveiled by Donald Trump is more than just a proposal to end the war in Ukraine. It is a stunning act of unilateral force, drafted in secret and presented to Europe as a finished deal they had no choice but to accept. Washington, in its arrogance, kept both Kiev and its European allies entirely in the dark on matters that directly threaten their very security. This is not diplomacy. It is a dictated peace. It is a plan that reads like a list of concessions to the Kremlin, demanding Ukraine surrender its sovereignty, its territory, and its future. And it comes with a threat. Sign or face the consequences. Tonight we ask, is this the end of the Atlantic alliance? Has the United States under Trump become not a partner but a danger to European security? And how will Europe and a besieged Ukraine respond to this brutal new reality? But first, let's get more details in this report.
Ukraine's European allies are holding talks on the sideline of the G20 summit over Trump's proposed peace plan to end the Ukraine war. In a joint statement, they described the proposal as unilateral, saying that it requires additional work. They expressed concern over the proposed limitations on Ukraine's armed forces, saying it leaves the country vulnerable to future attacks.
The war can only end with Ukraine's unconditional consent. Wars cannot be ended by major powers over the heads of the countries involved. Rather, this is a war that can only end with Ukraine's consent and with our consent, the consent of the European Union, because it is a war on the European continent.
Kiev has also rejected key elements of the plan. The Ukrainian president's office said the country will never be an obstacle to peace, but emphasized that its representatives would continue to defend the legitimate interests of the Ukrainian people. President Volodymyr Zelensky has warned that Ukraine is facing one of the most difficult moments in its history.
Now is one of the most difficult moments in our history. Now the pressure on Ukraine is one of the most difficult. Now Ukraine may find itself facing a very difficult choice. Either the loss of dignity, or the risk of losing a key partner. We did not betray Ukraine then, we will not do it now. And I know for sure that in this truly one of the most difficult moments in our history, I am not alone.
Neighboring Poland also expressed firm opposition, insisting that any peace agreement must be accepted by Kiev and that Ukrainians themselves must have a central role in negotiations. The White House has denied that Ukraine was sidelined, but skepticism in Europe remains high. Trump, meanwhile, has escalated pressure on Kiev, warning that Ukraine would lose additional territory in a short amount of time if it refused the plan, and declaring that Zelensky is going to have to approve it.
Well, he'll have to like it, and if he doesn't like it, then, you know, they should just keep fighting, I guess, you know.
The U.S. president said he had given Ukraine until Thursday to agree to the plan. According to widely leaked drafts, the U.S. plan includes several concessions Ukraine has previously ruled out. These include recognizing Crimea, Luhansk, and Donetsk as de facto Russian, obliging Ukraine to constitutionally renounce NATO membership, and reducing Ukraine's armed forces to 600,000 troops. Additional provisions would bar NATO troop deployments in Ukraine. The text also outlines steps for Russia's reintegration into the global economy and its return to the G8. For many European governments, the episode has exposed a far deeper worry. A peace plan drafted behind closed doors, unveiled as a near-final document, and built around sweeping concessions to Moscow, has intensified the sense that Washington under Trump is no longer behaving like a dependable ally. European officials say the administration bypassed NATO entirely, kept key European capitals in the dark about provisions that directly affect their own security, and excluded Ukraine, the country at the center of the war, from any meaningful role in shaping its terms. For Europe, the episode is a blunt reminder that under Trump, the United States is prepared to act unilaterally on matters central to Europe's security, even if its closest allies are left entirely out of the room.
Well, to analyze these new developments, we are joined by Mr. John Bosnich, journalist, activist, and political analyst, joining us from Fredericton, Canada. And Mr. John Stutling, author and commentator, joining us from Inderøy, Norway. Well, gentlemen, I'd like to thank both of you very much for joining us during this episode of Spotlight, of course. Mr. Bosnich, let's go ahead and start off with you, please. Let's start off with this U.S. unilateralism. Now, the Trump administration completely bypassed the NATO and the key European capitals in drafting this plan. Does this prove or at least signal that the transatlantic alliance is indeed finished?
Well, the transatlantic alliance, as we euphemistically call it, was never an alliance. It was an empire ruled from Washington with some advisors from London. And the rest of the countries across the mainland of Europe were merely cannon fodder for an anticipated war against the Soviet Union. So this whole charade of a partnership, of an alliance, of America's partners not being satisfied that they weren't consulted, that is, to use the initials, that is complete BS. There is nothing that the European so-called partners have ever been able to say to Washington. Washington has always been their controllers, and what's happening today with respect to Ukraine is an example of how Washington crushes opposing opinions among its federated military colonies. That's the straight story about what's happening.
Well, with that, let's go ahead and cross over to Mr. Stepling. Mr. Stepling, as we just now heard from Mr. Bosnich, I mean, basically the truth of what the U.S. is, what many people around the world know what the U.S. is, other than, of course, mainstream media, what they imply on what the U.S. is. This plan was presented, as we had mentioned, as a final document and, of course, not even as a starting point for negotiations. When it comes to the situation about Trump saying take it or leave it, what does this reveal about the U.S. and how it's used? Using its power under Trump, or has this actually always been the situation with the U.S., or is it basically that Trump is just more clear about it?
Well, let's remember, firstly, that the U.S. began interfering in Russian elections all the way back in 1996. They made a Hollywood movie about it called Spinning Boris. Then there was 2014, the Maidan coup, completely orchestrated by the U.S., State Department, CIA. The U.S. has been meddling in all of this from the beginning. They kept moving NATO eastward. So this idea that somehow giving Donbass to Russia is an example of caving in to the dictator Putin, this is nonsense. Does everybody forget for 7 years Donbass was bombed? It's predominantly ethnically Russian, Russian-speaking, and they were bombed by Kiev, terrorized by Kiev. People just seem to have this complete amnesia about this stuff. It's stunning. But the other thing is, we keep hearing in all of this, well, European security is threatened. Is somebody thinking that Russia is going to invade Norway or Spain or something anytime soon? Because they're not. They have no interest in trying to occupy a European country. I mean, this is farcical. It's pure fantasy. So yes, the U.S. acts unilaterally, but they always have. They just gave it a cosmetic treatment that made it appear democratic many times. But of course NATO is run by the U.S. All policy decisions coming out of NATO have always been carried out by the U.S., carried out in Washington. So what we're seeing also, though, with European leadership, people like Jens Stoltenberg and Merz in Germany and Macron and the Finns and the Estonians, is this rabid Russophobia. And I always hearken back to the dismantling of Yugoslavia, because that was a lesson that people seemed to not have learned how that was carried out. That was the last nominally socialist state in Europe, and the U.S. had to see it crushed. The European leadership went along with that enthusiastically because there was money to be made. And so now we're seeing all of this saber rattling from European leadership and from Brussels, van der Leyen and cuckoo Miss Callas, and they have no leverage. They rattle sabers that are made of paper mache. So it's the whole thing just strikes me as comical at this point.
Well, Mr. Stepling, I mean, as you're talking, I can definitely see Mr. Bosnich nodding and grinning in agreement, I believe. But Mr. Bosnich, I mean, you guys both mentioned the situation with the U.S., how history has basically shown. I do want to ask you, Mr. Bosnich, in relation to President Zelensky himself. Now, he spoke about this choice between losing dignity or losing a partner. Where does he fit on with all of this? I mean, the way that things have been playing specifically on media.
Well, first of all, this is whatever he says is what's being written for him by his CIA scriptwriters. The CIA organized through the corrupt oligarchs in post-communist Ukraine, they organized the transfer of money to Ukraine to create Zelensky. So I appreciate the remarks of my fellow commentator today about people don't seem to learn lessons, or they don't at least remember lessons from the past, but you can't remember what you never learned. And the lying mainstream media, plus the totally dysfunctional educational system in the West, has hidden the fact that from the end of World War II, the United States and England especially have been active in Ukraine. In the 1940s and 50s, they recruited former Waffen-SS officers to run guerrilla operations in Ukraine. They then recruited many exiled Ukrainians and brought them into the State Department and planned these actions decades ago. My father was an acquaintance of Zbigniew Brzezinski, who went to university with him in Canada. He visited Zbigniew in 1978 in the White House when they discussed the upcoming plan for the disruption of Ukraine. And this was even before the Soviet Union collapsed. So there is nothing new under the sun, and certainly not in Ukraine. As for Zelensky, Zelensky is literally nothing other than a paid actor who was selected by his boss, the oligarch Kolomoisky, who has run off to Israel to hide, who worked for the CIA. And this is the final act of a very sorry and bloodthirsty tale written in Washington in the late 1940s as they looked at what resources they might have beyond the Iron Curtain, and they looked to former Nazis and they recruited them. And that's the explanation for why we've seen so many Ukrainian soldiers with SS and swastika tattoos burned into their bodies by their own choice. This reality is what is coming to the fore. And there's nobody in the EU who doesn't realize this. And all of their crocodile tears that they're crying now about, oh, Russia did this and America is telling us what to do, all of that is another example of acting by players who knew for years that this was coming up and that if they failed, they would have to disavow it. Nothing more. A PSYOP operated from Washington and running as a boat of death on the blood of Slavs, both Ukrainians and Russians, because it's a no-lose situation for Washington. If they can make the Ukrainian and Russian brothers hate each other for the next 20 or 30 years, they will have achieved one of their primary goals.
Well, Mr. Suppling, I mean, the plan, as we were mentioning, reportedly forces Ukraine to give up any hope of joining the NATO. Now, what would you tell viewers and people around the world that are saying, isn't this basically handing Putin his biggest victory on a silver platter, coincidentally being delivered by an American partner? Where is Putin in all of this, and Russia, of course?
Well, I mean, Russia won the war. This tends to be what happens when you win a war. But again, remember that this was a corrupt regime in Kiev before Zelensky that was bombing the Donbass, which is predominantly Russian. They talk about the illegal annexation of Crimea. There was, in fact, a referendum. But these points have long historic tales behind them. You can't really understand it unless, as John pointed out, you go back to World War II and the end of World War II. But beyond that, what Ukraine right now is primarily objecting to in this peace plan is not giving up territory, is not losing any hope of joining NATO. They were terrified about this audit that was going to happen because they obviously are corrupt and stole dozens of billions of dollars that they have no way of explaining the disappearance. And it went into the pockets of oligarchs and Zelensky's pals and into Zelensky's pocket. And the thing is, everybody knows this. I mean, we're seeing, it's not, Zelensky's not the only actor here. I mean, we see these performances from European leaders as if the Russian hordes are assembling at the gates to the European civilization, and they're about to break through and march down the Champs-Élysées or something. I mean, Russia has enough on its plate. It's going to be quite happy to just wrap this up and hopefully get some relief from sanctions and so forth. But they have no imperialist ambition whatsoever. I mean, this is just ludicrous. So John's right. This was Washington wanting to put a ribbon on it, get done with it. Russia won the war. It's over. It's been over for 8-10 months. There was, you know, it was a complete waste of life for the last 10 months. They have been shanghaiing men off the street in Ukraine to use as cannon fodder, throwing them into this meat grinder. And you know, it's the typical story of war. The rich get richer. Defense contractors made a lot of money, so it was prolonged as long as it was possible, and now it's not possible. And as I say, Ukraine's biggest fear right now, the Zelensky administration's fear, is that they don't want an audit. The rest of it, they don't care about. This was, you know, Crimea and Donbass was lost a long time ago. So this is, of course, written and scripted by Washington, because most everything in the world is these days. And this is no exception. I mean, I predict Zelensky will end up with a late night talk show in Miami. And that's probably where, you know, that was his past, and that's going to be his future.
And Mr. Bosnich, what do you have in regards to what Mr. Stepling said? Do you believe that the war in Russia-Ukraine is finally over and this is the ending?
Well, I'm actually more optimistic than he is. I think the war will continue. And the reason why I say that's optimistic is because I think that although Russia is prepared to have a peace agreement at this time, Zelensky is not. Because the people who pay Zelensky are telling him, listen, puppet, you're going to do what we say, or you are not going to be alive in a very short period of time. And so for Zelensky, it's a matter of life and death. And if he were ever to show up, as my fellow commentator says, in a talk show in Florida, it would be in the same cell as the Americans stuck their former collaborator Noriega, or wherever they stick any one of their tin pot puppet dictators once he's no longer useful to them. And the sad fact of this matter is that the Ukrainian people were deceived. Their lying mainstream media in Ukraine worked for a Hollywood script to create the servant of the people, who was no such thing. Zelensky was a servant of the CIA. That's the movie that needs to be made from his jail cell in Florida when he finally gets there, if he lives long enough to get there. This is a picture of the reality of the totally corrupt Anglo-American empire in play all the time, for not just the past, you know, 3 years of this war, but for the entire period, for the 11 years since the United States staged the fake coup d'etat in Kiev that brought to power the entire gang behind Zelensky. And I'm glad that the other commentator today mentioned Yugoslavia, because I don't know if I've mentioned it before, but I was an advisor to former President Milosevic when he was kidnapped and taken to The Hague. My family comes from Yugoslavia, and I was living until recently and will be returning to Serbia, the center of the former Yugoslavia. And what has happened in Ukraine is transparent to me and those of us who lived through the Yugoslav operation, because it's identical. They set up a fake group of puppets. Those puppets were corrupt and stole money. They were removed and replaced by other puppets, and you have the disaster zone that is known as Serbia today, with people marching for a year against a corrupt, totally criminal government. This is what always happens when you get crooks like the CIA, and you dress them up in a suit and tie and pretend that they are statesmen. These are not statesmen. They are having no more success than putting lipstick on a pig.
Exactly. As you did mention, dressing up in suit and a tie, something we've seen in Syria and others recently, specifically. Mr. Steplin, we do have a few more minutes. I'd like to direct this question towards you. Under the Trump administration, under the U.S. specifically, last few years, I mean, the global system has been replaced. Has it been replaced in a system we now live in, which is basically a jungle where only threats and force matter?
Well, let me try to answer that in a slightly circuitous way, but apropos of what John said, I was part of the committee to defend Milosevic, actually, and was in Serbia a couple of times during that period, and the U.S., as is always the case, was aligned with the fascists, the Croat fascists that go back to World War II. The people that constructed the Jasenovac concentration camp and so forth. The United States is never on the side of democracy. They weren't in Latin America or in Africa. They fought against African independence. They are always on the side of dictators because dictators are easier to control. Zelensky fits this to a T. But the idea that we're now in a jungle, we have always been in a jungle. I mean, this is Western imperialism, and the West is prone to coercive measures whenever they can. I mean, we look at the dying empire today, though, because the U.S. keeps threatening, for example, Venezuela, but they can't really invade Venezuela because their power has waned considerably. And the only thing that has changed with Trump is that he sort of has done away with the middleman and he just cuts to the chase. But all these European leaders are flailing about and they simply have no leverage. They have nothing to back up this, Macron was talking about the French are ready to go to Ukraine and fight. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure that's going to happen. I mean, I don't mean to laugh at this, but I don't know another response that makes sense. This is U.S. imperialism. It's as it has existed for 70 years. And it's no different. The end is, whether John is right or I am right about exactly how long Zelensky can stay alive and occupy his presidential suites, I don't know. He is beholden to the Azov battalion people, the far-right fascists in Ukraine. They may want to take him out at a certain point. They clearly, those people are going to feel betrayed, certainly. But this was inevitable a year ago. This was inevitable. It was just going to be a matter of how and when and exactly what the terms of the so-called peace were going to look like. And they pretty much have ended up as most of us, I think, saw they were going to.
Well, on that point, I'd like to thank both of my guests, of course, for this very interesting discussion on this episode of Spotlight. From Fredericton, Canada, journalist, activist, and political analyst, Mr. John Bosnich. And, of course, as always, Mr. John Steplin, author and commentator. They're joining us from Indore, Norway. A pleasure to have you both. Until next time, goodbye.
IRIB English Radio presents Viewpoints.
Viewpoints.
With the presence of different scholars.
The presence of different scholars. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Well, welcome to another episode of the program Viewpoints. Today is Jamadi Asani III, the martyrdom anniversary of Lady of Light, Lady Fatimatu Zahra. So today's episode is dedicated to this holy character. With me in the studio are two guest speakers from the Islamic House of Qom, Sheikh Liaqat and Sheikh Latifi. Sheikh Liaqat, assalamu alaikum to you.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah.
And Sheikh Latifi, assalamu alaikum.
Alaykum assalam to you and to your dear listeners.
So as I said, Jamadi Hassani III is believed in the Islamic calendar to be the martyrdom anniversary of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, Lady of Light, the respected daughter of Prophet Muhammad, respected wife of Imam Ali alayhi salam, the mother of the Ahlul Bayt. You know, whenever a companion went or Sahabi went to the Imams, you know, they remembered themselves by the name of Fatima. We are the sons of Fatima. Such a great status for Lady Fatima. How can love for Fatima al-Zahra be demonstrated in practice in our daily life? And what daily behaviors lead to this love? This is a question for today's discussion, the major question. Of course, there are some other subtopics. Let's start with you, Sheikh Liaghat. So, how to benefit from her character in our daily life in today's world?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alayki ya Sayyidati Nisa al-Alameen, min al-Awwaleen wal-Akhireen. A beautiful question, of course. How can we demonstrate the love of Sayyida Fatima salamullahi alayha in our day-to-day lives? Over here, if we consider the love of Sayyida Fatima, it is not a love which is just in our hearts. Mm-hmm. So the love of Sayyida Fatima towards Amir al-Mu'mineen was not just the love towards Imam Ali alayhi salam, just the love towards the husband, yes, or just the love towards the Imam of her time. If we look into the lives, if we look into the life of Sayyida Fatima, we see that she stood by the side of Imam alayhi salam from the very beginning. Mm-hmm. So in the battle of Uhud, example, when the Prophet were injured, she would go to them and she would take care of them.
Right.
Example, during the other wars where Imam Ali alayhi salam used to go into the battlefield, she would take care of her children.
Okay.
So it's not just the love which is, okay, I love the Imam, that's it. Mm-hmm. It would be shown into action. And the very famous incident which happened, and a very sorrowful incident through which her martyrdom also happened.
Okay.
So everything is shown in action, standing up for the sake of wilaya, standing up for the sake of the Imam. It's not because of the husband that she was standing behind the door. Mm-hmm. It was not because in order to protect the husband, mm-hmm, that she's standing over there or standing up for the rights of the husband.
Right.
It is actually, in reality, standing up for the rights of the Imam of her time.
Okay.
Sacrificing for the Imam of her time.
So we can follow her up in this case. I mean,
exactly.
Okay.
If we truly love Sayyida Fatima, salamullahi alayha, we have to bring that quality of hers uh-huh into our life.
Okay.
That is standing up for the Imam of our time.
Okay.
So if we kind of bring it into a reality right
reality
now,
of life, that's right.
How are we standing right now for the Imam of our time?
Mm-hmm.
Are we standing up in order to protect him?
Mm-hmm.
Or are we ourselves causing harm, or are we ourselves causing tears or bringing tears into his eyes
that's
through
right
our actions?
Okay.
If we are truly loving Sayyida Imam Fatima, salamullahi
right
alayha,
right,
we have to do those actions. Or we have to have such actions in our lives that the Imam smiles, mm-hmm, that the Imam reappears, not that his reappearance is delayed.
Okay, I will get to more details about some practices that must be done,
okay,
or what exactly should be done. But Sheikh Latifi, now the major question is that so many people might say her lifespan was short, okay? So, and historically speaking, there are so many, we can say, references to which we can refer in order to get some lessons from the life of Lady Fatima al-Zahra. But now, after all these years, those teachings, how we can apply them in our daily life, from the morning up until night, I mean, it could be, for example, in our workplace, it could be in our house, it could be in our, we can say, the society that we are in. And I think that both individually and socially speaking, there are a lot to say about Lady Fatima al-Zahra, something which is very much, we can say, taken for granted or sometimes neglected in the history of the Shiite legacy.
Yes, actually, it's good to focus a little bit on those examples. Mm-hmm. What comes to my mind, for example, in our modern lifestyle, something that we lack is the good companionship.
Mm-hmm.
And some people, they suffer from loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that they live in the desert. No, they live in sometimes in apartment buildings, complex a person is living in a building which is inhabited by all other people, but they don't care about each other.
Yes.
But when we look at the life of Lady Fatima al-Zahra, we see that how she cared about her neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
And this is famous that one night Imam al-Hassan says, I was observing the night prayer of my mother and I realized that she is just going through all neighbors one by one. And it took her such a long time that I was surprised. She's not praying for us. She's always praying for the neighbors.
Oh.
And I asked her, Mother, what about us? You know, every family, it's like that. They have ups and downs. They have problems. So at least at the moment of prayer, you would expect that she would say something about their own family. And Lady Fatima al-Zahra says, Ya bunayya al-jar summad-dar. The first comes the neighbor and then ourselves.
And this has become a famous sentence in the apartment buildings nowadays all across Shiite lands. Okay?
Yes, it's a source of inspiration.
In order to invite the people to respect the neighbors.
Yes, right. Source of inspiration. So mm-hmm. you put it in practice to the level that you do not do it for the show off. Mm-hmm. You're doing it in your most sincere moments with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. You still think about your neighbors. Another thing is that the support that she gave, again, to the neighbors, practically, like, there's this incident that some of the ladies from the neighbors in Medina, they would come to Lady Fatima mm-hmm. al-Zahra and they would ask their questions. This shows us, first of all, that she was knowledgeable. She was, in contrast to some other people who, after some years, they turned into narrators of hadith. Even at the time of the Prophet, Lady Fatima al-Zahra was a person whom other ladies knew that she has the answers for their questions.
That's right.
So they went to her and asked her question. And in one incident, one of them, for example, said, we're sorry, we're taking your time. And Lady Fatima al-Zahra says, okay, listen, you know, the blessing and the reward that I'm getting for this from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is so much that you should not be embarrassed about this. I actually love doing this. Mm-hmm. I do not do it because, for example, I'm caught up in a situation. No, I have a plan for this. I'm expecting the reward from Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for this.
Okay.
So this actually reminds us of another thing about the Ahlul Bayt in general. The love for Ahlul Bayt for us, it's not because they demand and they require our love. It's because the love for Ahlul Bayt is actually helping us in our growth.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, it's part of their pledge of allegiance, their pledge of obedience to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is part of their mission as the lights of the guidance for the people.
That's right.
Like, it's not that they like it to be loved by others, mm-hmm. as if they have some attention-seeking disorder, unfortunately, or something like that. No,
okay.
It's that they have a duty and they cannot carry out that duty without other people acknowledging their position and coming to them and asking them for guidance.
All right. Okay. Thank you. So, as I said, sometimes I think that because she was a lady, she could be a role model only for women today, but also men can benefit a lot from her character.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, as you could see in today's world, the sacrifice that she made for Prophet Muhammad, you know, and then Imam Ali alayhi salam, and they're nurturing the children, okay? All of them have lessons in our daily life, moment by moment. But now, one of the other major questions is that, so if we can say true love for Lady Fatima al-Zahra and the concept of Tawheed, how these two come together? I mean, how we can be a monotheistic and muwahid in our lifestyle today? And we know that Tawheedi lifestyle is one of the most important things which must be studied a lot. I mean, it has lots of details in today's world. How Lady Fatima's lifestyle can encourage us to more Tawheedi type of lifestyle, Sheikh?
In the life of Sayyida Fatima, salamullahi alayha, we see an incident which I would say, which projects her love towards Tawheed, towards the oneness of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It is famously known about her that when she would finish off her prayers, her feet would bruise.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Because of the amount of time she stood in front of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala doing the prayers. So this was the love her towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. She would never ever get away from tasbih. She would have tasbih either in her hand or would recite tasbih through her beloved tongue, example. Right. She would praise Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Mm-hmm. She would stand up in the nights praying Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala to such an extent, just like Sheikh Hussein has just now informed us about how she would pray for other people. So this is very famously known about her love towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And in a narration from Imam As-Sadiq alayhi salam, where it was asked to him, what did Sayyida Fatima do before creation, like before she came into this world, right, where the Imam says she used to do tasbih of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So she used to immerse herself in the glorification of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So in today's world, like if we look at the love of Sayyida Fatima salamullahi alayha and balance the love with the teachings of Tawheed, it is very important for us to, I would say, this love of Bi Fatima Zahra salamu alayha would act as a bridge for us to go towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. It's not just about the love of Sayyida Fatima salamu alayha. It is also the love of the Ahlul Bayt. The Ahlul Bayt, the Holy Quran, everything is revealed. They have come to us for this purpose, that they take us to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. So not just through the salat or prayers of Sayyida Fatima. Even if we look at the prayers of Amirul Mu'mineen, even if we look at the charity of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, if we look at the teachings of Imam Jafar Sadiq alayhi salam, everything, every single act of the Ahlul Bayt will act as a bridge for all of us to go towards Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
That's right.
So it's very important for us that we shouldn't stop just at the love of the Ahlul Bayt, at the love of Sayyida Fatima salamu alayha, and we have to take that bridge. We have to take it as a support to go to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
The religion of Islam seems to be very much masculine religion from outside, especially for those who are not familiar with the core meanings of Islam and the teachings and the doctrines. But I think ladies like Lady Khadija, Lady Fatima Zahra, Lady Zainab, we can say the mothers of the Ahlul Bayt, give it a kind of, a light picture of life, something that is still going on. And the legacy of the Ahlul Bayt after all these years still fresh and alive because of the presence of ladies like Lady Fatima Zahra and Lady Zainab. May Allah accept your majalis, your du'as and supplications, your donations on this day. Thank you, Amar Sheikh Latifi.
Thank you.
And Sheikh Liaghat for
Thank
a nice
so
elaboration
much.
Regarding the lifestyle of Lady Fatima Zahra. Dear listeners, again we express our condolences on the martyrdom anniversary of Lady of Light, Lady Fatima Zahra, salamullah alayha. To another episode, God bless you all.
Shining bright, you came to us with a heart so full of love, and you showed that you're the one who cares the most, and to us you've always been so close. Everyone will say, please save me, accept Al-Habib. يقولها لنا يوم القيامة أمتي يقولها شفاعة أنا لها أنا لها. Thank you.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Palestinians are terrorists because they use human shields, right? Well, that's what the Zionists love to say when they justify bombing hospitals and schools. They routinely claim that Hamas houses command and control centers underneath hospitals, apartment buildings, and schools. Of course, all of that has been debunked and is a total lie. But what if I told you that the Israelis were projecting? Because we all know that their every accusation is a confession. Well, a groundbreaking report by the Gray Zone has just exposed a highly secretive IDF command and control center beneath a densely populated civilian area in North Tel Aviv. And the best part, Iran directly bombed it during the 12-day war with Israel back in June. On June 13th, Iran launched a barrage of missiles at Israel. The Zionists immediately began crying about how Iran was bombing civilians, not caring about the fact that they had been slaughtering civilians themselves in hospitals and schools in Gaza for 2 years. But as it turns out, Iran wasn't firing inaccurate missiles indiscriminately at Israeli civilians. They were actually targeting high-value military targets. In this clip here, you can see the Fox journalist Trey Yanks reporting the aftermath of the targeted site. He was immediately told to stop filming by Israeli police.
The Iranians have responded with three waves of ballistic missiles. This is Israel's version of the Pentagon, the Kiryat. And the building on this compound was just hit.
Please go back. Go back, please.
You can understand here, it's very tense at this location. Because the Iranians are now targeting the defense establishment of Israel. And so I'm going to have my cameraman pan up here to this building just across the street from the
Kiryat.
And so...
Moments prior, Iran had struck the north tower of the Da Vinci apartment complex roughly 550 meters southwest of Yink's location. The Gray Zone determined that the building sits immediately south of the Kinneret Israeli Air Force towers and above an underground military intelligence bunker jointly administered by the U.S. and Israeli militaries. According to an analysis of leaked emails, public documents, and Israeli news reports, the location is host to a highly secretive, electromagnetically shielded intelligence facility known as Site 81. Leaked emails from a former Israeli military chief of staff further indicate that Site 81 is an important command and control node. The Jerusalem Post also reported that an Iranian missile that struck the Da Vinci Towers was just a stone's throw from Netanyahu's office, which was then known as Building 22. The Prime Minister's office began undergoing renovations just weeks after the 2025 12-day war between Israel and Iran, and is rumored to have been damaged in the strike. Now, unfortunately, you can't use Google Maps to view the area because they have censored and blurred the information in order to protect secrecy. A photo of Site 81 published by the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers in February 2013 as part of a corrosion test of the underground structure's concrete overlay in galvanized steel plating can be geolocated to what is now the site of the Da Vinci apartment towers, with the southern of the two 18-story Israeli Air Force Knesset towers just meters away. According to a website for the Knesset towers, published by the Israeli construction firm Dan Yakibis, the buildings were constructed for the Israeli Air Force headquarters. The Israeli aluminum building enclosure company Alumeshet described its work on the towers in 2002 as including the construction of a blast mitigation system ensuring maximum security. But despite the sophisticated engineering, secrecy, and protection, Iran was still able to strike it and damage it. One Israeli resident of the tower complained that he was being used as a human shield. Quote, "Today I realize I've been paying 12,000 shekels, or $3,650 a month, to protect the Kiryah," the resident explained, using the common shorthand for the Israeli military headquarters. Geolocation of the Site 81 photo suggests that the Da Vinci Towers are also protecting the secretive underground intelligence facility. The bunker is apparently located less than 100 meters from a children's playground, alongside a large community center which opened at the base of the towers in July 2023. By situating some of its most sensitive military installations in the heart of a civilian area, Israel has engaged in the human shielding practice it routinely accuses Palestinians of exploiting. A previously unreported leaked email exchange between ex-NATO commander James Stavridis and former Israeli Military Chief of Staff Gabi Ashkenazi appears to confirm the presence of a command and control network operating inside the Site 81 bunker, smack in the middle of a densely populated civilian area. "Hi, Gabi," Stavridis wrote to Ashkenazi on September 1st, 2015. "I am working with an exciting company called Think Logical here in the USA. They build command and control networks and just won a big contract out at Site 81 with the IDF." Not only does this further expose Israel as the hypocritical genocidal state that it is, it also validates Iran's claims of having significantly damaged Israeli military infrastructure. Throughout the 12-day war, Israel bombed Iranian civilians, murdering hundreds of innocent people, including babies, while complaining about Iran supposedly indiscriminately bombing their civilians. Zionist propagandists also boasted about taking out Iran's more sophisticated missiles in their surprise attack, forcing them to rely on older, less accurate missiles incapable of precisely hitting their targets. Thank you.